right, welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. It's nice to have you all here, see some new faces. Today we only have one case on our 10 o'clock docket. It's Nortex versus Ream. And if the clerk will please announce the attorneys who will be arguing. All right, Mr. Peebles.
Good morning. My name is C.D. Peebles. I'm an attorney practicing here in Tarrant County. I represent Nortex Foundation Designs, Inc. Nortex Foundation Designs, Inc. is a Tarrant County company that specializes in designing residential foundations for builders in the area. They had a engineer working for them by the name of Jerry Coffey, who designed thousands of residential foundation designs. And one of those was for a builder who built a home for the Reams. The Reams are dissatisfied with the functioning of the foundation and sued the builder. And we have been brought into the lawsuit. The sole issue, when the Reams filed suit against us, they filed a certificate of merit in compliance with Chapter 150 of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code. The sole complaint that Nortex has concerning the certificate of merit is that Mr. Mansour is not practicing in the same area as Nortex. We are operating under the 2005 version of the statute. I think when we start to analyze what is meant by the terminology used in that statute, it is as important to look at what the statute does not say as to what the statute says. The statute does not say that it is sufficient for him to be knowledgeable in the area of practice based on the expert's skill and experience. That's what the 2009 version says. The 2009 version of the statute, the focus is on that the expert must be knowledgeable in the area of practice. The 2005 version requires that he be practicing in the same area. Nortex contends that this is a substantive change that was made by the legislature, and it was made for a reason. They did not want to have the experts actually practicing in the same area of the defendant. They only wanted to have the knowledge and skills. So using the practicing in the same area standard, we believe that the trial court failed to properly interpret and apply that standard. And because the trial court failed to properly interpret and apply the standard, that is an abuse of discretion. So how are we going to interpret practice in the same area? Y'all have many rules that you can follow in determining how a statute should be interpreted. But thankfully, we can stop at the first canon, because all you have to do when analyzing the phrase practicing in the same area is to use the common meaning of the word. As lawyers, we are intimately familiar with what it means to practice in an area. Engineers are professionals just like lawyers. They practice their trade. Doctors practice their trade. Attorneys practice. You, ladies, practice in the area of appellate law. You would qualify under the 2005 statute to testify as to whether or not, if we had a legal malpractice statute that was similar to the Certificate of Merit statute, you would be able to testify under the 2005 law as to whether or not an appellate lawyer had breached his standard.
And you don't think, because we rule on whether trial lawyers have rendered ineffective assistance of counsel, we couldn't testify that a trial lawyer had rendered ineffective assistance of counsel because we don't actually hear jury trials?
I don't think we have to go there, to be honest. The contrast I would use is this. I am not a family lawyer. I do not practice in the area of family law. Now, have I helped people out from time to time throughout my career in handling their divorce case? Yes. Does that make me a family lawyer? No. I do not practice in the area of family law. I do not practice in the area of criminal law, patent law, securities law. I practice in the area of civil trial law, which encompasses things like this. With that as the background, with that as the idea as to what it means to practice in an area, we apply that terminology to the facts of this case.
So how do you get past the statement in his certificate of merit that says, I'm actively engaged in the practice of geotechnical engineering, and I understand you want to say that's different, and structural engineering in the North Texas area and the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex in particular? Isn't structural engineering designing foundations?
I don't think so. I think structural engineering is a very broad category of engineering. Within structural engineering, you have all types of analyses that can go on. How to build a bridge, how to build a building, and within each subset, you can get down to a residential foundation design. And let me say this, that we're not contending that Mr. Mansour must design residential foundations. We're not trying to place him in that box. What we are trying to say is that he has to design something. He needs to have designed something as a structural engineer. He doesn't design anything. When you look at his deposition testimony, he says he does three things: forensic engineering, forensic geotechnical evaluations, and foundation analysis.
But to look at his deposition testimony, we've got to go outside the four corners of the certificate of merit, and this court has held, in an opinion that I wrote, that we don't go outside the four corners of the certificate of merit.
And I'm familiar with that opinion, and I appreciate what you're saying. The first thing I'll say is that opinion was withdrawn.
Because they settled.
They settled. Well, but
the judgment was withdrawn.
All right. I think this is different, and here's why. In the Carter Burgess case, you had each other going after one another on the issue of whether or not they were actually doing surveying work or engineering work. In this instance, the only reason that we are asking you to go outside the four corners is because it goes to his qualifications. We ought to be able to peek behind a statement to determine whether or not the person is actually practicing in the area. The problem with his, and I'll say this much, I think you can get there, frankly, without peeking behind the affidavit. Because he says in his affidavit that he designed, I want to get the wording just right, engineered residential concrete foundations as a part of his structural design practice, using the past tense engineered. I point out in the briefing that it would have been easy for him to say, I currently am in the business of engineering residential foundations, but he didn't do that, and he can't do that because he doesn't do that.
But you really only, I mean, if you're just looking at the certificate of merit, I engineered could mean last week, yesterday, or 10 years ago. The only way you know that it's of any significant amount of time is from the deposition.
And that's why it should be considered.
So because you're saying that we were wrong in Carter Burgess.
I'm saying that you are presented now with facts that weren't present in Carter Burgess. And Carter Burgess, you're dealing with a fight over what's surveying and what's engineering, and you had them going at it like that. What we have before us now is a look to determine what exactly was meant when he said he engineered residential concrete foundations. It's appropriate to look behind the affidavit to ferret that out. And when you look behind it, that's when you learn that really what he was doing was forensic engineering. Now, under the 2005 version of the statute, what does that mean? That means he is an expert in forensic engineering. He would be qualified to testify as to whether or not a particular forensic engineer did his job properly. Did the forensic engineer take the steps that are necessary to reach a good conclusion? But being a forensic engineer does not allow you to testify that under these circumstances, the foundation was not designed properly. That's what the Landreth case is all about. In the Landreth case, you had a defendant who did restoration work to prolong the life of a building. And the expert was an expert in forensic architecture. And that in that situation, the Corpus Christi court said, you don't qualify under the 2005 version. The best contrast to Landreth and what and where we're not asking you to go is the Natex case. In the Natex case, the expert performed structural designs, and the defendant came in and said, well, you don't do it for school buildings, so we're not in the same area. That's not what we're asking of this court. Well, Nortex designs residential foundations. Mansour did not design residential foundations. He didn't design foundations. He didn't design anything. He was a structural, he was a forensic engineer.
What do you conclude the definition of forensic engineer being? I mean, did anybody define it anywhere in the affidavit or in testimony?
No, ma'am, but I think if we look at what the area of forensic engineering is, it is simply an engineer who goes in after the fact and makes a determination as to exactly what went wrong. And it could be in any area. It could be, why did the Minneapolis bridge collapse? I think in that situation, you'd hire a forensic engineer to come in and make that determination. I think they're post-catastrophe investigations. And I think the way the 2005 statute was written, and what area did he practice in? He was practicing as a forensic engineer. So under the 2005 version of the statute, that's all he can really question is whether or not a forensic engineer has done things right.
Court and Landreth also say you cannot look outside the four corners of the affidavit.
So do you believe that a forensic engineer would be qualified under the changed 2009 statute?
Absolutely. There is no question in my mind that under the 2009 version of the statute that Mr. Mansour could sign a certificate of merit.
I'm going to remember you said that.
Please do. Please do. Because I'm not trying to hide anything here. I agree that Mr. Mansour is knowledgeable in the area of the practice. Okay? He's a geotechnical engineer. That's his stock and trade. We run in a small circle. Okay? And Mansour is a geotech. And the geotech is the one that tests the soil and writes a report, and it's based on this report that Mr. Coffey prepares his foundations. When you look at the affidavit, it is chock full of geotech lingo. That's his deal. If he was up here testifying concerning geotechnical matters about what the potential vertical movement of the soil is, or what the liquid plasticity of the soil is, I wouldn't be sitting here. He's got those qualifications. The rub I have is that Mansoor, who's a geotech, is coming in here saying that my structural design guy did not do his job right. I don't have anything else. Do y'all have any questions for me? Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, Ms. Randall.
I would first like to make a correction. I apologize. In my briefing, I said that there was no evidence before the court on what the defendant did. And in preparing for this, there is. There's an affidavit by Mr. Coffey, and that is at the court's record at 103. And Mr. Coffey basically just says, I've designed residential foundations. There's no specifics about what he does or how he does it. He also states he's a professional engineer. So I stand corrected on that, and I apologize to the court and to Mr. Peebles for making that reference. What we have here is a court getting ready to make a decision on a case that was on the precipice of going to the new statute. This case was filed in August 3rd of 2009. The statute became effective. The new statute, to which Mr. Peebles clearly said Mr. Mansoor would be qualified, came into effect less than a month later in September 1st, 2009. So in reviewing this this work, I tried to think of it as to how this court certainly would want to render a decision, not necessarily under the new statute, but something that is similarly consistent in terms of how to apply this practicing in the same area. There was a new case that came out, and it is not for publication yet. It came out in August of 2012, and it is Morrison Seifert Murphy versus Zion, and it was in the 5th District, and I have the Westlaw reference, 2012 Westlaw 3678638. Now, the court there is interpreting the new statute, but what the court did, which was very interesting, and I think it's a method that all the courts should use in interpreting the statute, rather than go to the Medical Act that some of the decisions have done to try and get some clarification, the court did a unique thing. It stayed within Chapter 157, and it looked at the definition section, and Justice Livingston, you just said, has anyone defined anything? And what the Fifth Appellate District did, it looked at the definition in 150.001. Now, in the new statute, it defines the practice of architecture, and it refers everyone to the occupation code. It defines the practice of engineering and refers everyone to the occupation code. In the old section, I went and I pulled the old section, and the old definition in 150 only defined the practice of architecture, and it referred people to the occupation code. So I thought it is logical then for this court, in trying to define what is the practice of engineering, to look at the occupation code. So I pulled up the engineering occupation code, and it's quite interesting. It is in the practice of engineering. It's in the Occupation Code Section 1001.003, and it defines the practice of engineering, and it lists multiple 11 or 12 different areas. It says the practice of engineering includes, and it has Section 1. I'm going to point out the ones that I think are relevant here: consultation, investigation, evaluation, analysis, planning, engineering for program management, providing an expert engineering opinion or testimony, engineering for testing or evaluating materials for construction or other use. And then it goes on and it refers to several others. But then it also says engineering for construction, alternation, or repair of real property, which is precisely what Mr. Mansoor testified to having done. And I don't really understand this, it even defines in 11, providing an engineering opinion or analysis related to a certificate of merit under Section 150. So even that is defined as the practice of engineering. And I believe that in the Landreth case, there is nothing And this opinion from Dallas refers back to Landreth, even though it's the old opinion, and it says there's nothing in Landreth that tells us you have to look at the certificate and this qualification in sub-areas. Engineering is a science that is applied across all forms of buildings. And as this court, I think, has previously recognized, it is not that you design a foundation using principles for a home any different than they designed the foundation for this building. It's mathematical, it's based on physics, it's based on force and load levels. That is the analysis that engineers go through. And Mr. Mansour's affidavit has with it attached, he has attached his expert CV. And in that expert CV, he identifies multiple jobs that he had where he designed and conducted engineering and designed foundations. He also testifies in his affidavit, and it's on court record page 111. I have reviewed structural designs of residential structures on many occasions and am familiar with analyzing the damages to determine the cause or causes. Further, I have engineered residential concrete foundations as part of my structural design practice. So the issue that is being argued here is that we should take a very broad science where these gentlemen and women who are licensed as engineers in the state of Texas, who perform and practice engineering as it's defined under the code, that we should somehow say, you can design this building and you can evaluate this building, but you cannot look at my plans, because that's precisely what Mr. Mansour does. He looks at the plans, he looks at the design, he does the calculations and says, this foundation is not properly designed. It's not properly designed for these soils. And throughout Texas, I'm certain this court is familiar, the majority of construction defect cases that occur in Texas are structural issues that deal with foundation designs because of the expansive soils that exist in this area.
So is it your opinion that this engineer would be qualified to not only give the information in the certificate of merit, but would also be qualified to testify as an expert at a subsequent trial?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Mansour, by the way, has. He's been challenged on several occasions, and I personally have been the one to defend the Daubert hearings, and he has testified. And so even though I don't think that's the standard for the certificate, Mr. Mansour has testified as an expert witness in multiple cases for our firm. And he has survived Daubert challenges. I can't tell you whether he has ever successfully been challenged, but not as far as the time that I have been with him. I don't want to misrepresent.
Well, yeah, that would go really outside the record anyway. Thank
Correct.
You.
But yes. So I think looking at the professional code would have explained a lot of things. There is another case, you know, the Landreth case and this case I just cited to you, this Morrison-Seifert. They both involved an expert, and he is an architect, and it's Mr. Drabilbus. He was the engineer in both of those cases. And in the land, when you look at some of the ways people have evaluated, there have been challenges, like an architect was being challenged with respect to a landscape architecture. If you look at the code section, that is a model that could have been applied, and they could easily have said, and I pulled the, just to make this argument, I pulled the code section, the occupation code section for architects. And there is a different section for landscape architecture. That could easily have been the defining point for the trial court in that case and the appellate court. They could have said, look, there are two different licensings we have here for landscape architects and regular architects, and they're both, the practices are defined differently. So no, you as a architect cannot testify as a landscape architect. But that is not the case for engineering, and I believe it's probably because the engineering practice is so broadly applied across many, many areas. And that is why I believe that Mr. Mansour's affidavit with the accompanying expert CV attached clearly establishes that he is more than qualified to have reviewed Mr. Coffey's work and had made a determination it was not sufficient for purposes of the Reams Foundation. And if there, I have really no further comment unless there are any questions from the court. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Randall. Mr. Peebles, rebuttal.
Briefly, Your Honors. I think they're really over-interpreting the what it means to practice in the area. And I frankly don't even think they have to go there. But, I mean, the idea that he's a practicing engineer so he can testify to anything, I just don't think is right. I think when you look at the ordinary plain meaning of the word practicing in the area, you've got to, you can't just take it and say, okay, there's three areas. Engineers, architect, and landscape architects. I don't think that's the law. I think you need to break it down a little more than that. And I want one final word on the use of extrinsic evidence. And you know, I've read the opinions, I know where we're coming from on this, but I really think there are going to be times, and this is one of them, when it's okay to look outside of the affidavit. I mean, this is a situation where when you look at his affidavit, the language that he uses in that affidavit concerning his qualifications is indefinite and it's misleading. When you have indefinite, misleading language in an affidavit, you ought to be able to look behind it to see what is it that this man really does. And when you do that analysis, we learn that what he really does is forensic engineering. To take it a step further, I'm not suggesting that we have it here by any stretch, but if you just had someone who just said it, who just decided to put in there because he knew he needed to, that I engaged in structural designs because he did it 10 years ago, to not allow the court to look back behind that affidavit to see if he does, in fact, really do the designs is just not appropriate. We've got to have, I understand that we don't want to be peeking behind these things all the time, but we need an exception in this case. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Peebles. Ms. Randall, we appreciate your arguments today and, of course, your briefing as well. And your case is now submitted. And that being our last case, we will adjourn court now. Thank you.
All rise. The Honorable Court of Appeals of the Second District of Texas now stands adjourned.